We have a couple of questions on the chat, but I have a question here also that I think might be a good one to start with, and it's from Craig, because it kind of speaks to what you were, perhaps you wrapped up with, was the story. And he's asking, did Lama speak much about embodiment of the teacher? You could ask Craig maybe a little bit more about what he's thinking about, if you'd like to, Connie. You know, he's on here somewhere, so we can ask him to speak up and ask his question himself, if you'd like.
Actually, that would be helpful. I'm not sure what he means by that.
I'm not either. That's why I mentioned that. Craig, do you want to open your mic?
Yeah, sure.
Hi, Craig.
As I typed that question, you actually went on to talk all about embodiment, as far as I can tell. It's, you know, at some point, it's just a word to describe, you know, the characteristic, the qualities of the teacher. And I think shortly after I typed that, you talked about equanimity and then cultivating this loving kindness and this student-centered approach. So it's just a term that we're using at the U of T course, you know, embodying the qualities of mindfulness and trying to teach teachers how to embody those qualities. And I think maybe if I focus that question a little bit, it would be sort of the essential practices of a teacher. If you talked about any essential practices that would help to actualize the nobody of the teacher that seems to be at the center of the embodiment of the teacher.
Specifically within the context, you know, applied to the context of being a teacher and teaching, I would have to say no. It, you know, we could certainly go back through transcripts, but as we said at the beginning, you know, we had Lama for so little time. And, you know, the few years that we did have Lama, when he started talking about this universal education, where it was a limited time. And so what he actually got to in terms of what he talked about was also limited. I think part of our job is extrapolating, is, you know, I had in retrospect, I sometimes think that Lama knew he wasn't going to be around with us for very long, and consequently, everything he talked to us about was incredibly concentrated, you know? I mean, like, you know, really, really, really concentrated, and so it needs expansion. It needs us to actually, okay, you know, these few words contain lots and lots of layers and lots of elements, and we need to expand them. We need to extrapolate. We need to use our wisdom in order to, you know, understand all the layers in this, you know, in one phrase, you know, in one paragraph. And so certainly in all of Lama's Dharma teachings, yes, he told us all sorts of things about, you know, how to become bodhisattvas, how to become better human beings, how to grow our wisdom and our compassion, all of those things, certainly, you know, how to get in touch with our deeper universal potential and our reality, all of that certainly in his teachings, you know. And I have to say that for me, one of Lama's particularly useful teachings was on Mahamudra in that regard, in terms of providing, you know, not just a conceptual structure, but a practice structure for deepening all of those elements, you know, of oneself as a human being. But that's just me. You know?
not everybody's going to have a different door, you know, through which they're going to be able to enter into that aspect of themselves.
Connie, just sorry to interrupt you, but you're a little bit hard for me to hear right now. You seem to have gone, maybe you're further from your mic than you were, or something's okay. Changed a little bit. But okay, better? Much better already, okay. I think.
Sorry.
Yeah, okay. You were losing some of those last words, and okay. They sounded like good ones.
Actually, I finished, so.
Okay, well, that's all right. I didn't want to interrupt, but you sound better. But Peter has a question. Peter, would you like to open your mic and ask your question?
Yes, I would like to address Craig's question.
Fine.
When you may have noticed when a Lama gives a teaching, so they usually get up on the stage and before on the throne, you know, or the seat. Traditionally, this is, and before they sit down, they flick the finger like that, a snap of the finger. And the purpose of that is to remind them of impermanence, that death can come any second. And the realization to understand that death can come at any second, the purpose is completely lower your ego. So that's one technique. Another technique that Lama has mentioned, I know I had to give some talks at some point. And I didn't feel very qualified, you know, traveling with Lama, and suddenly I was in front of a group of people somewhere. And, you know, was leading a meditation or whatever. Anyway, Lama said, you know, imagine that you're the Buddha of wisdom, and it's not you. It's what Connie said, you become nobody, the Buddha of wisdom. And if you know the Buddha of wisdom or Manjushri mantra, you say that, you know, a few times before you speak. And so then it's not you, you know, and you speak from the heart. You don't speak from the intellect. If you're trying to speak from the intellect about something that you're not really thoroughly familiar with, you haven't totally internalized, then it doesn't communicate well. But if you speak from your heart, from your experience, then it communicates. And the other similar practice is to visualize that you're Buddha of compassion. So wisdom and compassion are the essence anyway of Buddha's teachings, the wisdom and method. So to visualize, I mean, anything like that, but yes, it's definitely getting eliminating the ego. It's not how great am I going to sound, or you know, how intelligent are my words. It's really from the heart, and that communicated from Lama. So I think as far as embodiment is concerned, you know, the ego, we're not trying to embody something, but we have to eliminate. And somebody that I read quite a lot, they say there is no teaching, there is only learning. And again, I think that speaks to Connie's point. It's very, very, I think that's very true. And if we remember that, that's good. The other thing, the Tibetan, you know, listening, reflecting, meditating. Personally, I find listening very difficult, because the way I learned, the way my education system was very visual, you know. And I mean, I learned with blackboards, and now these days it's PowerPoints, but I needed to see things and I needed to write things out. Just listening, as Tibetans do, you know, I mean, there wasn't another real medium. They sit in teachings and they listen. And Lama used to say, he said, I like teaching Westerners. I only have to tell them things three times. Tibetans, I have to tell them five times, something like that. Anyway, that's to respond to Craig.
Thank you, Peter. That's great. Thank you. And we have another question from Wendy. So, Wendy.
Oh, thank you. Actually, it was just a question from Peter. You mentioned very Buddhist practices. I wondered if you had any secular practice. You know, you mentioned saying a Buddhist mantra for, you know, Manjushri or Chenrezig. Could you interpret that in a secular way?
Well, yeah, in a secular way, it's actually quite difficult for me, because that's how I've come into the universal education. But looking at an audience, I heard a story. There was a Nepalese man that I met in business, conducting business. He was, you know, very humble, ordinary person. And he was part of one of these business groups that are all around the world, you know, and they have chapters everywhere. And he was sent to a conference. I think it was in the States. And he had to address an audience of 2,000 people. And he said, you know, I'm from Nepal. I didn't know how to address 2,000 American people. But then he said, I looked at them and I thought to myself, every one of these people is going to die, just like I am. We're all the same. We're all going to die. And he said, after he thought that, then, you know, his sort of fear and apprehension went away, because he recognized that he was, I mean, everybody's the same. The other thing is recognizing everybody wants to be happy. Nobody wants to be suffering.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that's very helpful. Thank you, Peter. Hello.
Hello. Hello. First of all, thank you very much for doing this forum. I am new to this forum. And thank you. Then the second thing, I said hello to Wendy, especially in Tukharman, because we just finished this weekend certification 2, the second module with Wendy. And I only can say how amazing the virtues of this kind of teachings are. All the things that you have mentioned is a secular way of bringing knowledge from one side to the other side, or facilitating knowledge. I think Wendy did this weekend fantastically. And I wish you could share with us, Wendy, what are the bases? I have benefited a lot, but maybe you want to say how you do it.
Thank you, Marianne, and I'll pay you later for that wonderful recommendation. But actually, this is an opportunity to really maybe address the same question to Venerable Connie. You know.
That would be great. I mean, as we're talking, I'm thinking there's a wonderful wealth of discussion points here that you know, and already Venerable Connie, you shared that you had hours of stuff you could share with us. So we know you are ripe for talking to us more. But yeah, we're coming close to the end. But would you like to field that question as the last kind of point we'll come to? What are the ways that you address this question of, as a teacher, you know, how to embody the qualities that would be Lama Yeshe's, get his thumbs up.
Well, as I said, I remind myself of that story a lot. Pretty much before any, you know, every I teach almost every weekend, so it's kind of a constant in my life. And one of the things that I do personally is, because I teach new people, that's pretty much all that I do, is I don't teach Buddhists. I teach people who are completely new, who, you know, the Art of Happiness course that we teach is for the general public. All of the courses in teaching meditation that I teach are for, you know, anybody who's interested. They're not particularly Buddhist in nature. So every time I sit down in front of a group of people, I really take a moment to look around and, you know, at each individual. And I mean, one thing I do is exactly what Peter mentioned, you know, is remember that everybody here is everybody is here because they want to be happy and they don't want to suffer. And, you know, they are suffering. We are all suffering. It helps me a lot to remember that I'm not different from them. You know, I'm in the same boat. You know, we are all suffering in one way or another. And so, you know, if I'm lucky enough to have something that might help, that's great, you know, but it doesn't make me better. It doesn't make me different. It simply, they're going to have a lot of knowledge and a lot of qualities that I don't have, every single person who's sitting in front of me. And so this is very humbling. And I am a firm believer of the fact that, you know, without humility, a teacher can actually create damage. And so, I try and be extremely careful at the beginning of every course that I give that to start on that basis. And it seems to make a difference. It seems to make a difference in the quality of what I do and the way I'm able to relate to people. And I'm very grateful for that. You know, that doesn't make me special. It just means that something karmically, happily is working, and that's great. So for me, those are important elements.
Just to share something which for some reason it came to me that I should mention it. When we first took a training many, many years ago with Rasmus Hugard, who now runs Potential Project, he shared one of his techniques and he said, I really encourage you to do this each time before you present. And his what he did was, for the few days before he had a course with new people, he would visualize them and motivate and really reflect on why his intentions and focus on a kind of loving kindness practice with them. And he felt that was helpful. So that might be something that would speak to us too. But wow, that was very, very, very helpful, Connie. And so you opened a lot of doors, I think, and some conversations that would be lovely to continue. And maybe there is some way or some opportunities we can find as members of the Universal Education family to continue those conversations. And thank you, Peter, so much. It's like you took us back in history, like down memory lane, but brought us all to feel younger again. I wasn't there with you in Nepal, but I was somewhere else doing the same thing, as I'm sure many of us here were. So we can kind of recall our paths and be really grateful that we're here together and we've been able to share this time together. As we always do at the end of a forum, we are so grateful, of course, to you. And we thank you both very much. We thank everyone for being here and spending time together and creating the community that makes us a universal community.